Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
First of all, welcome. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I love this place. Second year now. Beautiful place. Beautiful little restaurant here, right on the water. Actually, we've come back. I brought my wife down here twice last summer after being here. Telling her, I said, it's a really great place. So
you cannot ask
you're not
for
gonna
it.
Be, you can't beat it, I'm telling you.
I mean, this is a Tuesday night. It's 79 degrees. River's about as gentle as it could be, except for the guy in the water trying to flop his way through.
That's Bauer.
This is 25 years now.
Yeah?
94 to 2019. Yeah. There'll be a reunion and so forth. But
September 7th, Buffalo.
Yeah. What does it feel like knowing it's 25 years now?
Well, I really didn't think about it until you said it about 10 minutes ago. And you said 25 years. And I was like, geez, it has been that long. And I guess the other day I was sitting there and I said, you know what? We're 7 months away from the year 2020.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I put it in really in perspective. But, we haven't aged a bit. I mean.
Yeah, thank goodness. See, none of us
have. Everything's a little fatter, a little more bloated, and the pain doesn't go away as fast anymore. So, the 94 was such a special team. I got guys calling in now. I live in State College, so you got a bunch of guys calling in. You got a place for me to stay, and just to hearing the guys who were actually coming in for it, it's gonna be a good time. I mean, we were all very, very good friends. We all still remain good friends, and guys coming in from all over the place.
When you went to the Citrus Bowl the year before,
sure,
and you beat Tennessee, great second half. Did you have a sense that you had something cooking, that you had something that could be special, or did that take a while to think that?
No, it was because me personally, I wasn't starting on the 93 team yet. I was one of the new starters. Me and Andre were two new tackles because we had Malinowski and Derek Pickett.
Right.
So we had to replace
those
two.
By the way, Andre Johnson, for those who are the uninitiated.
So we were new, but our receivers were Bobby and Freddie. They were already there. Running backs were all the same. Our quarterback was the same. Yeah, Kyle Brady right there. So you know when it really stuck, it really hit me? And Bucky Greeley tells the story. I mean, he should be a radio guy the way he can tell the story. But it's in camp. I mean, defense is always so far ahead of offense. Always. It's just like
that's just the way.
It's just you just line up and their timing is and then you're not there as an offense.
9 out of 10 times they are.
It's a slaughter. Usually the first scrimmage is a slaughter. But for years upon years and being there with Joe, and that was he'd always have to skew the scrimmage towards the offense because they had he didn't want them losing confidence.
Right.
So
I've seen that.
It was about the first scrimmage in camp, and we were just hammering our defense, and it was a pretty good defense. I guess it got beat up throughout the year because they were on the field so much. But Bucky Greeley says, "Oh my God!" I said, "Dude," he's just like, "Dude," he said, "Joe was all over us." He said, "Just relax." He said, "He's got to help them now." And then we were all just sitting there like, hey, we must be pretty good here. And there was that fine line between being cocky and being arrogant and stuff like that. But we knew we were good, didn't know how good we were, and then we went and played Minnesota. And, you could tell the stories about how, we were a quick drive offense, 30, 40 touchdowns under 2 minutes. But our first drive of that year was like an 18-play drive against Minnesota. And then we get the ball back after three and out, but Minnesota and Kijana takes the second play. And it was just, that was the rest of the season. And it just grew. And it was just, as we, as the season went on, it just got easier and easier. And as I said, you get a quiet confidence and you know no one can stop you. And, you're watching the game film. You don't see how good Kerry's playing until you watch the game film. I mean, you can see how good Kijana's doing because you're blocking for him and running. He's running ahead of you, but Kerry was on fire. I mean, Kerry was just hitting every open receiver, and he was doing it right and getting rid of the ball when he needed to get rid of the ball. If he was getting pressure, he was a fifth-year guy. I mean, he had done his time, and it was his time to shine, and he shone.
He was sacked 5 times the entire season.
Steve, 3. Wally got sacked. Our backup quarterback got sacked.
It's,
yep,
it's
that's
always,
the.
You know, it's always
we
Wally's
have this argument
fault.
All the time, Steve.
It's
come
always,
on.
It's always Wally's fault.
Yep.
Trying to keep Wally, you know.
Our starting five, Kerry Collins got sacked three times our senior year, and when our backups went in, and that's the funny story is that I think we played. The Michigan game, which was week six, was the first time we actually played a drive past the third quarter.
Right. And
amazing.
That was actually the one I wanted to bring up because everybody brings up Illinois. Nobody ever brings up Michigan. Kajana gets hurt against Temple.
Yep.
And I remember being in the locker room after that game, and like you could tell it was like it wasn't quite right.
Yeah, it was something wrong with it.
It was something wrong with Kajana's thumb. But now you go to Michigan. He plays. Just what did it mean?
We didn't know.
Right.
We didn't know. I mean, it was a game time decision.
Right.
Yeah.
What did it mean when you got in the huddle? Because that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And he comes out with you. What kind of boost did that give everybody?
He was just, give me a hole. That's all he would say. Just give me a. And all you needed was a quick second.
Yeah.
And I mean, as he had proved over and over again that year, if he just got any kind of crease, he just took through it. I mean, only trying to tackle him high, he just ran over him. Low, you had a gang tackle him, and it wasn't happening. And you know, we can always look back and say, yeah, we wish we had won. Somebody had won, Kerry or Kajana had won the Heisman, but split the vote. But I mean, it's again, we're probably the most recognized number two team in the history of college football, and those two are probably the poster children for splitting votes on a Heisman. But you know, we talk about Michigan, Steve, and you know, the 3 years before that, 91, 2, and 3, or 2, 3, and 4, we started 5-0.
Right.
And that was that sixth game. We had tripped up three straight years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was such a huge game and just a hurdle that we had gotten over out there. And that was all Kerry. I mean, he just, you know, looking at that, how he hit Bobby across the middle now and that slant touchdown was just it was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, and again, in the clutch, got it done. I think Miller had a big fumble recovery in that really helped out. So, yeah, the defense did something during the course of that year.
Blatantly bad holding call against me in the first quarter, Steve. You believe that? At Michigan.
To be honest with you, I'm shocked. Because normally at Michigan, you want to talk about the reputation for even-handed. It was just to see that out of the norm.
Yeah.
And of all people, you.
Yeah, me. You know, Mr. Law and Order over here.
Yeah,
they got me for a hold and called a touchdown back and cost us 4 points. But late in the game, you're saying about Brian Miller getting that fumble late in the game. It may have been a fourth down,
I think it was a fumble to end the game.
And then they called us for too many men on the field because we were celebrating. And we were just sitting there like, oh, my God, they're going to give him the ball back.
Yeah.
But that's just our mindset, like, oh, my God, they're going to give him the ball. And it was just like how it worked out there. And having been done for 25 years and talking to other guys who've played at Michigan, it's just like a running joke of just how blatantly bad the calls are out there all the time.
After Illinois jumps out 21-0, after that point, it's a 35-10 game.
Yep.
But the last seven to get to 35 is obviously the drive. All right, so you're in a huddle.
Yep.
Anything said when you start, or you just go to work?
Well, Archie let the punt go over his head.
Yeah, I remember that.
So it rolls for about 30 yards, and we were actually running out to the field, and we were actually...
These are issues Bauer's teams never had to deal with. Punt goes over the head.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Coates, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we only punted like six times in 94, Bauer. No, but we were running. I remember we were all running on the field yelling at Archie, like, you can't catch that ball. We had that quiet confidence, and we knew we were going to do it.
Right.
We went out there. We were just breaking his chops, like, you can't catch that ball. Now we got to go 96. And then, so we're in the huddle, and I one of the Chicago papers was like laughing, and they were like making a joke about how we were in the huddle and we were laughing.
Yeah,
we're making fun of them, like just kidding around. And as the drive went on, it was just a testament to our strength and conditioning program with John Thomas back in the day and how we were so in shape. And you know, you get a team calling defensive timeouts because they can't handle you.
Right.
That's like the mark of like, we've gotten you beat. And they're in their huddle and their defensive line are on their knees. And it's like, you got nothing.
Well,
you
that's
got
Dana
no
Howard, Simeon Rice, Hardy. These are all, I mean, Howard was the defensive player of the year.
College Football Hall of Fame this year with Kerry.
Simeon Rice and Hardy were both first-round picks.
2 and 3 overall.
Right. And they're, I mean, and now I'm talking.
The fourth guy is John Holosek.
John Holosek.
From the Buffalo Bills. He had a real good NFL career.
And they were bent over like there on the free throw line with a minute to go in the game.
Sweating like Moses Malone on the free throw line.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things that we were actually, we weren't real talkers, like, you know, to the other team, trash talking, but we were actually in the huddle laughing at them.
Yeah.
Like, get off your knees and this and that. Are you guys kidding me? You're calling defensive timeouts. And they couldn't look at us in the eyes because they knew they were done. Right. It was just a matter of time. And
Lou Tepper, the head coach, was the defensive guy. I mean, mm-hmm. That was his group. And Kyle Brady, I mean, obviously you can't tell until you see the tape later.
Yeah.
But Kyle Brady took Simeon Rice on, and he took him one-on-one.
They would not. It was the 93 game that we were sort of in the rain at Beaver Stadium. And, I mean, he just did some stuff to Simeon Rice that I'm sure Simeon Rice never had done to him before.
Right.
So he was petrified of Kyle Brady. There's no doubt about that.
We're used to this.
There we go.
Hey, this is just the way it is.
It's just Bauer.
Right? I mean, that's his ride.
Bauer's chirping over here, of course, you know?
This happens to be, if you want to avoid the rock slide, this is our ride. Okay.
Hey, the train's open, the road's not. Nah, but just a good event tomorrow, a great event tonight. Yeah. So happy to be here. Good people.
I want to ask you about the Rose Bowl part. You had to endure watching the Miami-Nebraska game the night before. What was it like to endure that? Because Miami had it shot, and essentially he gave the game away.
Absolutely. Well, you were talking about Warren Sapp before, and how he didn't make a play.
All night.
We were talking about, you know, when Kerry and Kijana went on the award circuit, going to the Heisman, the Maxwell Awards, the Orlando show. Kerry said that every time they got off a plane, he just sprinted out of the airport to go get a cigarette.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're watching this game, and he's jumping around and dancing, and Ray Lewis and the other guys are you know, the first half, and then Nebraska couldn't do a thing right in the first half.
No, that's right.
And then they just wore them down, and Miami was cramping up. And these guys are from Miami. Yeah. And they're the ones cramping up, and the guys from the Midwest or U.S. are just rolling all over them, and they did nothing to stop. But I would like to know who paid the bill, because there was a lot of broken furniture in that hotel we stayed at. You could...
Yeah.
If you had a microphone to go down that hallway, you just heard chairs getting smashed around in the hotel rooms. And I always have a little angst towards Bob Costas when he said, "Oh, congratulations, Tom Osborne, your first national title." It's like, we haven't played yet, you know. And I guess one of the coolest things with after the Rose Bowl we were walking off the field, and one of the D linemen came up from Oregon, and he looked at us and he was like, "Dude, you guys are the national champions! Wow."
Yeah.
You know, he was shaking our hands like, "Wow, that was pretty awesome." And that was they played us tough.
Danny O'Neill played a great game. They had several NFL guys on that team.
Wilcox
ended up playing with the Patriots. I mean, they had some players.
Yes, they did.
It's like they're Pac-12 champions. In fact, I think you beat a better team than Nebraska did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know Nebraska has the pros on. I mean, Miami had the pros on it.
Yeah.
Lewis and Sapp, but that was a better offense.
It's just funny how it all worked out.
Like, if Osborne had won against Miami in 83, I think it would have been a different vote in 94 because he had not won.
And if Colorado didn't hit that Hail Mary against Michigan, Michigan would have been ranked higher.
Right.
And
Nebraska then beat Colorado late in the year.
And at the same time, I believe it was around the same time that we were playing Illinois, and it was like they had the mojo because Colorado had beaten the Big Ten runner-up. It's just too much politics goes into it, like you said before about they created the BCS for that reason. It was just so political.
Well,
even watching that.
The reason we have what we have today, which is not a perfect system, but you have a BCS followed by a college football playoff, is because of your team. Your team's the reason.
Yeah. Interesting that we were always that, why would it always happen to us? I mean, with Joe, I mean, what, he have seven undefeated teams and five were
five ended up unbeaten, untied at the end.
Yep.
Like at the end, when the bowl season was over with. And one of them won a national championship. The other one he won the title was with one loss, ironically. So four of the five end up. I've said this before, so this is not unusual for me to say it. But your team was recognized by groups as a national champion. The 69 team was recognized by groups as a national champion. So were 11 and 12.
Yep.
And believe it or not, I know they had two losses, the 81 team got recognized by some team. I don't understand why there isn't some recognition about that part of it, because other people are recognizing, and I realize there's a consensus, they want to play it, but you know what? Play the game.
Well, Jeff Byers, I do the radio show with, obviously you've known for years and in the radio business. When Central Florida's making that, or was it Central Florida who's making that big stink that they were undefeated national champions?
Yeah, Central Florida,
So the NCAA released their national champions, and they released their record books, and if you look at it...
Oh, that's where I get this from.
The 94 team was actually recognized on there.
Yes. See, that's where I got my information from, was from the NCAA record book.
So that's the NCAA
book
saying that, so...
I mean, that's where I got my info from.
Now, Bauer's got nothing on me now.
Yeah. Huh. Well, you just got the glance.
Look at those glasses. Looks like he's one of the guys who killed Kennedy. Ray-Ban. Jeez.
Well, he'd tell you it's the other way around. He's actually on the protection detail.
That's why he did get shot then.
It's a great cause tomorrow. It's a great time. You played in this last year. I know you had a great time with it.
Wonderful time. We got bought some more guys down. We'll got Adam Brenneman. Got some young blood in here. Adam Brenneman and Christian Hackenberg will be down tomorrow for the tournament. And then me, Trey, Shane, and Sweeney will be here tonight. We're the pregame party people, you know. I mean, let the young kids play golf.
You're the people that get it.
Yes.
I mean, you're the people.
So, trying to bring the young bucks into the fold here, and we'll be all right. There's some good dudes.
No, you know, it tells you a lot over the generations. Mm-hmm. You know, you celebrate with the 80s, the 90s, and then a couple guys from the 2010s coming in.
Absolutely.
That tells you a lot. That tells you a lot. What do you think of the current program right now?
I think that I like this team better than any other one because there's no stars.
Yeah.
That's sort of been Penn State's MO over the years. When we didn't have stars, we actually were a much better team.
Yeah.
You don't have a Saquon or the face of the program in Trace McSorley or a Saquon Barkley or a Hackenberg.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't had that in a while. And so you're going to have some guys who are going to step up who are going to need to step up, and that's a good thing. You're going to have guys competing to be the leaders, and I think that only bodes well for the team. But I the defensive team speed, I mean, Trey ran a 5.4 40. I mean, we got guys who were playing his position running 4.3 40s. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Just the team speed that we're rocking right now, it's borderline insane. I mean, it's crazy how fast some of these guys are.
He shook his head when you said 5.4.
No, well, 5.7 then. You know, sorry, you know. just under 6 seconds. Doctor, good seeing you, brother.
Good seeing you, brother.
Thanks for having me down.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Trey Bauer, my good friend.
You're the best. I hate to say that. You're the best. You know it, too.
Good to see you, pal.
And just so we can clarify, just to get this conversation started.
I wanted to, yes, I think there needs to be some clarifying remarks. Everyone
in the SEC cheats except for Vanderbilt. Let's just throw it out there because those are the facts.
Where does Vanderbilt usually finish?
Last.
Is that evidence?
Yes, correct.
So you're saying, like, Ole Miss.
Okay, so do you remember the conversation on Blue White Tailgate? It was 2-3 years ago. Ole Miss, number one in the country. Mississippi State, number three.
Yep.
7 weeks in the season.
Dak Prescott, yeah.
Yes. And I said, they're cheating. There's no way these guys should be 1-3 in the country because they were undefeated. I go, they're cheating.
Yeah.
And I got a phone call from my son, Riley, who you know.
Yep.
And Riley said, Dad, you can't say that stuff. I'm like, they're definitely cheating. There's no doubt about it. And 2 years later, they're both on probation.
Yeah.
So let's just stop. Stop the insanity.
Now, you won't claim another institution is cheating. You just don't like them. Notre Dame.
Well, I mean, they're cheating because obviously none of those guys can get into that school. As a Catholic, and I can say that, like, it's a really good school. Okay, but they on their own merits, that's not happening. They're not, no.
In a moment of point counterpoint, we had your esteemed colleague, Keith Conlon, on in the
previous he's not my esteemed colleague, by the way.
Yeah. Somebody that you've, over time, associated with.
Correct. I've kind of adopted him as my, you know, mentally challenged younger brother. Correct.
Yeah. When you have an opportunity to compare notes on teams, I believe you played on a team recognized as the national champion, correct?
Correct. We should have won two in a row.
I know.
But we didn't.
I understand. You were 23-1 in those games.
Correct.
Yeah. Team you lost to, well, they probably weren't on the, well, that's a different
what,
story.
They weren't on probation?
No.
Barry Switzer coached Oklahoma team, really? Come on,
do you know the, do you know who the backup quarterback who was hurt that didn't play the game?
Troy Aikman. Correct.
Yeah. So, broke his leg.
But kudos to Barry to, you know, reach out to the UCLA coach and get him a shot, and obviously the rest is history, so.
Yeah. In a point-counterpoint, what made 86, now 94 special in its own way.
It's not that special.
But in 86,
yeah,
you can pick up from there.
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to understand, like, in the context of 85, we were undefeated, and we should have won the national championship. We turned the ball over, what, three times inside the 20. We didn't really get anything done, you know, done offensively. You know, we had some really good players there, but we just turned the ball over. And, you know, as you move up the food chain, certainly in college and the pros, the more you turn it over in championship games, you're not going to win.
Right.
But we felt like so Jamel Holloway led the country in rushing that year. He had minus 6 yards rushing against us.
Right.
Okay, so, like, we did our part, but the offense just couldn't get out of their own way. So then that led into the 86 season, which, you know, we felt we were the best team in the country. And, you know, we had a lot of confidence. We had a lot of players coming back. And, you know, we just felt like it was ours to lose, and we weren't going to lose it.
Okay, serious question now. Times have changed. Transfer portal exists. Players now, if you're really good, you're going to the NFL after year three. Now, the rules were different back in your era.
Correct.
One of the important elements that made 86 special was the commitment of the fifth-year players, you among them, to say, we're coming back. Because they could have gotten their degree and gone.
Correct.
That was the rule back then.
Correct.
Could you have kept that team together today, knowing the personalities on that team and knowing what the rules are today? It's a hypothetical. It's a difficult question.
Well, I think it's not that difficult. I think the era was different. I think the guys on that team, it were, you know, kind of old school people at heart.
Yeah.
Their parents were. It was kind of like they didn't. There was a lot of unfinished business, so to speak.
Yes.
So I think in that regard. I think it would be difficult. I mean, the era is obviously a different era, right? The guys today are bigger, stronger, faster, whatever, but it's still football, right? I said to Keith on the way up here, I said, you know, I don't understand the whole portal thing. I mean, I don't understand, like, so let me get this straight. So you're with guys for 4 years, you know, some of your best friends. I mean, some of my best friends to this day are former Penn State teammates of mine.
Right.
You know, and Tim Sweeney and Shane Connell will be here later tonight, but, and those are two of them, right? So. Right. Like, I don't understand, like, why you'd be at a school for 4 years and then all of a sudden you transfer and go somewhere else. And I just don't, and there's no right answer for it, but I just don't understand, like, why someone would do. I just don't. And I haven't talked to any of the kids, the Penn State kids, like, why they're doing that. It just makes no sense to me.
If I had to pick a guy on that team, you'd say, hey, Shane Conlon would have been that guy. I kind of felt like when he said he was coming back, I felt like the dominoes followed after that. And look, he could have gone.
Sure.
Because if he, you know, all he had to do was make sure that if he had his degree by May, which he was on track to do.
Yep.
Right? He could have gone. So the option was there.
Yep.
And he said no because he wanted to come back.
Yeah. Well, the option was there for me too,
right,
by the way.
Right. I know that. I said that earlier.
Yeah, because back then, and I'm not sure if they have it now, but back then, if you remember, they had the supplemental draft.
Yes.
So,
right.
Yeah, so the year that Bosworth,
Bernie Kosar was a supplemental draft guy, Bosworth was.
Yeah, as long as you graduated, like, in the 4 years you were there, you had that option, and I chose not to do it. But, I mean, for Shane, I mean, to me, there was no, and he was my roommate at the time, so there was no doubt there were all those guys were coming back. Bobby White and Schaefer and, you know, Duffy Cobbs and Ray Ice and all those guys. I mean, they were Donnie Graham, I mean, one after the other. I mean,
Timmy Johnson.
There's no doubt all those guys are coming back.
Right. It's interesting because, obviously, you know, I grew up in that era as well, too. I mean, I go back to 1980, for goodness sakes. I understand why some people want to do it. I got it because the money is so big right now. But I can honestly say, and I would never be in this position. I don't have the athleticism to ever even think about it. But if I were in that position, I couldn't even conceive leaving early.
Well, I think, you
I mean,
know,
I can understand the money. I got
sure,
it.
But sure, sure. Like, but you got to understand, the money was huge back then.
Yeah. Yeah, for that era, it was, sure.
Okay, so, all right. So, you know, Shane grew up with, you know, two brothers and a sister in a three-bedroom house in Frewsburg, New York.
And
he's the eighth pick in the draft. And
I've been to Frewsburg, so
yeah,
I know.
Right? And his dad, you know, state trooper, mom, didn't work, right?
Yeah.
But his contract, I think, was 4 years, $2.5 million, 800 guaranteed. Like, that's a generational wealth creation event in 1987 or 1986, right? So there might be more zeros attached now, but the
it's
numbers
all
are still,
it's all
it's all relative. I mean, the numbers are staggering, right? So, I mean, to me, I just think about it where, like, it shouldn't be necessarily about that. I mean, I chose to come back for my fifth year, got hurt, and, you know, it cost me a lot of money in the NFL, right?
I know it did.
Which is fine. Like, so if kids now, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, why would the kid, like, you know, not come back for his last year, whatever? I'm like, if he's really, truly dedicated to the whole football thing, you know, things can happen. We didn't have insurance policies back then. We didn't have, there's a huge safety net now, which we didn't have back then.
What's interesting about that is that you all commit to come back. But you didn't really, I mean, did you have any member of your family come up to you at any point saying, maybe you ought to go?
No.
They didn't think that way either.
No. Well, I got a phone call at the time. So I got a phone call from Carl Peterson, who was the general manager of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And he called me and he said, hey, we know you're eligible for the draft because you graduate, you're graduating. We're going to pick, we'd like to take you in the third round of the draft.
Right.
So I called Joe and I said, this is what Carl Peterson said. He's like, okay, well, we're going to call Dick Steinberg. So at the time, Dick Steinberg was the guy for New England.
And just remember, Joe's, and I didn't want to cut you off, but Joe always said, hey, look, let me call people I trust.
Correct.
And I'll get a read for you. So in other words, you weren't being stopped. He was trying to help.
He was absolutely trying to help.
Right,
so,
just like he helped Black Ledge and he helped Munchak.
Correct. So it was kind of like his whole thing was, all right, well, let's just, well, I'll call a couple of my guys. Like, okay, fine, right?
And
so,
Dick Steinberg was always one of them.
Yes, and so I went to Joe's office. It was Joe and I, Dick Steinberg on the phone. He, you know, Joe said to me, just tell Dick what Carl told you. So Dick goes, okay, all right, Kansas City, third round pick. Yeah, they need a linebacker, whatever. He's like, that's about right. So Joe's like, okay, so what do you think? So Dick goes, listen. He goes, the difference between you and Shane Collin is minimal.
Right.
And the fact is, he's going to be taking the top 10 picks in the draft. You should be a first-rounder next year if all things go equally.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that's about right. You know, but if you get hurt, which I did, it's a big deal, right? So, and we didn't have anything, and there was nothing in place. I'm not sure about the kids now, but there was nothing in place where if you had an injury which would sidetrack you or take you out of, like, where you probably should have went. I'm not sure if they have that now or they didn't have it then.
You can get insurance now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can definitely get insurance policies now. So it's.
Yeah. So my dad was my high school coach, and, you know, obviously he, like, loved Joe and Sue, whatever. And he's, you know, I told him I was going to go see Joe, and he said, well, what do you say? And I, you know, we told him, and so Joe looked at me and he goes, what do you think? I said, well, I should probably come back then. He goes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
You know, I call my dad, and it's like, now it's like, I think the parents are, you know, a little out of control for sure. And I'm a parent of five kids, so I can say that. Like, I mean, to me, I don't understand. It's not about the, when I hear, like, people talk about sports, it's all about the parents. It's not about the kids, which is insane.
Shane Collin, that's a very good.
Oh my God.
All right. Yeah.
Just, it never ends.
We were talking about Frewsburg, New York.
We were talking about beef on wick sandwiches.
When I asked, you're around this all the time, you know, and you and I did the show for years. We loved it.
Yes.
You and I had a blast.
We had too much fun. We actually had too much fun. And by the way, we got paid to do that.
Well, what people don't realize is that, you know, there are seven segments, okay, which means there are six breaks.
Correct.
We probably had more fun in those than we did.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What do you think of this year's team? I mean, it's interesting because James said something interesting when I was talking to about 10 days ago, and he said, it's amazing. Now we win 9 games and people are disappointed.
Correct.
That's kind of a good thing about where the program is. What do you think about this current team?
The thing about it, which I find very interesting, is that they're very young, they're very athletic, and that there's almost like no fear. And it's like, if you want to be a championship caliber team, in my opinion, yeah. There should be no fear. You should like do your stuff, get coached up, and then do what you're supposed to be doing. And there were times last year where, there was hesitation, and then all of a sudden it's kind of like they turned it on in certain situations, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
And I think more of it's more about experience and doing it play in, play out, series in, series out. And I mean, I'm excited for the kids. I really am. And James and the staff. I mean, I think he's got a great staff, and I'm a big fan. So.
Yeah, no, Tim, obviously I'm a big fan because I'm watching him every single day. You become a big fan watching them every day, which I get the chance to do. So then you really understand why
Correct. You
want to do something.
Correct.
Gina Auriemma said something interesting at the women's basketball Final Four, and he said, "I think there are some coaches out there that fear now coaching their kids." Their players because of the transfer portals and everything
yep.
like that. Do you get concerned about that there's so
I don't
much
give a crap,
movement?
Quite frankly. I really don't care. I mean I to me again we talked about earlier, I don't understand like why they would do that. And I think that at the end of the day it's like Joe would say, basically paraphrasing him, he would say, "We're gonna go with the guys who are with us." It'd be like the recruiting stuff. We're always top 10 in recruiting,
right?
Because we selected certain guys and we wanted those guys. And it's like, let's worry about the guys we have versus the guys that we lost or they're not showing up.
Which I talked about when the Stevens thing came up. I said, let's talk a lot about Sean Clifford. I'd rather talk about people who are here and people who
aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really been my attitude about
it. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a great story. So I guess it's like 1980, I guess it's 85 maybe or 86. We're recruiting a certain running back out of Harrisburg, New Jersey, or Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, who had a 10-year 10-year pro career.
We know exactly who you speak of.
Who I despise.
Yes.
And if he were right now, we'd be throwing hands. But so he came up for a recruiting visit, one of the top recruits in the country.
Yep.
Made a jackass out of himself.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sunday morning, Joe wants to know, okay, so what was with this kid or whatever. And we basically pulled our scholarship from this one kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up going to Notre Dame, having a good career, whatever, played in the NFL for 10 years. But, he was not a Penn State guy.
Oh, Michael Robinson went through the same thing. He and Matt Rice were the guy that is still in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, running back.
Yep.
Right? Came in there. Said Joe, not our kind of guy. Joe said, boom, no scholarship for him.
Yeah, so what it was is, like, back in the day, there was no social media, there was no internet, right? So it was kind of like when, of course, they asked Joe the question, like, well, are you unhappy, whatever. I can't remember the guy's name. I think it was Ricky Waters, what his name
was. Yeah, it might have been, yeah.
Right? Was kind of, well, you know what? We wish him well, and glad he's going to Notre Dame, and we'll see him every season. And by the way, when I played, we were 4-1 against Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, we were 4-1 against Alabama.
Yep, I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a witness.
You were there. That's right. You were a witness to history.
I was a witness to history.
Good history.
That was back in the day. I was the third announcer on the network at that point.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I was the third announcer on the network during your era.
Well, who were the first two?
It was Gil Santos, John Grant, and me.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I remember those names.
And then
you're much better looking though.
Well, on radio, I always am. My good friend, great to see you.
It was a pleasure.
There'll be no Shane Conlon rebuttal tonight.
Yeah, I don't know about that. He's afraid to get on the air, but
I said you live in Sewickley. I said Jack lives in Sewickley. He says, "No, I live in the poor section." We'll come back from Penn's Tavern, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.